Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Right. Okay. So the next speaker is Adam, talking about joint work with somebody or other, but go on, Adam.
Okay, great. So yeah, thanks for coming here today. Offices and onto the Zoom. The commute, I guess, was longer than we expected to take. End up starting a little bit late, but I'm going to be talking now about some of this work that myself and Anuj have been doing on this Comonads project. And I liked the way Dan sort of referred to us as Comonad engineers in the previous talk. I think that's quite apt. It feels kind of like what we're doing. It feels a little bit at the moment like we have these things we want to describe and we're stumbling around in the dark sometimes trying to find the right Comonad to do it. So hopefully, if we iterate on this process enough, we'll get some insights into how to do this in a more general framework. So what I want to talk about then is how we turned this this comonadic view towards an area of so towards the idea or the concept of generalized quantifiers from descriptive complexity theory. This is work in progress, so it may be, I'm not on the right thing to move this on. So it's a little bit rough around the edges, but hopefully by the end of this, you'll see that we have a construction that should be able to deal with a generalization of the K-pebble game, which is done in one of these original game Comonad papers, the one with Samson, Anuj, and Peng Ming. So yeah, this is what I'll talk about. I'll talk through, well, I guess this is quite a broad audience, so I'm going to start off by introducing the sort of aim of descriptive complexity when it comes to these model comparison games and why they're of interest to us and what we kind of want out of them in terms of describing computation, which maybe is slightly different to the semantics people. So give you a sense of what we're looking for out of this. Introduce this idea of generalized quantifiers, which in a sense encapsulate the idea of adding power to a logic, adding computational or expressive power to a logic in a very direct way. Then I'll briefly recap over game components, as Dan very helpfully did in the last talk. And then I'll show some of the aspects of our construction that we've come up with. Let's get started. So one of the things that's really important to people in descriptive complexity theory, in fact, I guess the sort of key aim of descriptive complexity theory is to link together logics with complexity classes. So this is kind of all really springs out of a seminal result by Fagan in, I think, the 70s, where he showed that existential second order logic captures NP time over finite structures. So that means that any NP class of structures has a sentence in existential second order logic that has a query in existential second order logic that defines it, and similarly everything in existential second order logic can be decided in NP time. So the big question that this opens up is, well, is there a similar logic for p-time? And this has been the sort of holy grail of descriptive complexity theory for quite some time. Firstly, we know that first order logic doesn't do it. We'll see in a bit that model comparison games, these games that spoiler and duplicator play between two structures, are really the key to showing that first order logic and any logic can't capture particular queries. It's still open whether we can find a logic for p-time. This is a slide that's in the wrong place, we'll start and look at it for a second, which is that, you know, first order logic is in p-time, we know that there are queries that it can't express that are p-time decidable. The kind of most basic example is you take a graph and you want to decide whether it's connected, in a similar way to as Dan was talking about in the last talk about these modal logics without fixed points. You can only sort of say statements that are like, something is two steps away or three steps away or n steps away, but you can't say we will reach a particular vertex eventually. So in standard first order logic without these fixed points, you can't do that. That then requires extending first order logic. So what we talk about when we talk about adding in quantifiers, we're talking about extending the power of first order logic in a sense to capture these new queries that we can't express and hopefully get closer to the this holy grail of being able to capture P time, right? This is how descriptive complexity has sort of developed over the last, number of decades. Right, so a couple of examples of quantifiers we could add in. There are these fixed point quantifiers. So that allows us to sort of add in a second order variable that's defined inductively in a way within our logic. Right? So that's what these inflationary fixed point quantifiers are doing. You're saying, take some sentence in my logic that includes this extra second order variable, and we're kind of telling you how to define what that relation contains in the sort of next step. So you could think of taking a vertex and taking its neighbors and then taking the neighbors of its neighbors, and you're trying to find the connected component of that vertex, say in a graph. And now you can define things like that. You can define that inductive process all in first order logic. So you should expect that, you should expect those kind of queries to be allowed. So that's what these inflationary fixed points, unfortunately, one of the big problems is you add inflationary fixed points and you still can't do one of the most simple things in first order logic, which is count. You can't tell the difference between structures with an even number of vertices and structures with an odd number of elements in them. So another kind of quantifier, another sort of power you might want to add is counting. So this is similarly giving you a description of how you add those in. These quantifiers are then going to be, say, you're going to say there exists greater than or equal to tuples such that this tuple with the free variables that you're given satisfies some formula in your logic. So counting quantifiers, again, a natural thing to add into your first order logic. So how do we judge the strength of these logics, of these extensions of first order logic? Well, that's where these model comparison games come in. And where we kind of start to see this grading or this adding of resources to capture the power of the logic. So this could be seen as sort of grading this sort of syntactic resource you're adding in. So in first order logic, we say, for example, we can take the quantifier depth of a sentence and see first order logic as actually this sort of hierarchy of logics that have, or of sentences or formulas that have quantifier depth, that are quantifier free and then have quantifier depth 1 and 2 and all the way up to arbitrary quantifier depth. And that resource can kind of be tested by these Ehrenfreund-Frese games. So if you have an Ehrenfreund-Frese game that goes on for n rounds and duplicator has a winning strategy for the Ehrenfreund-Frese game between two structures for n rounds, we know that those structures agree on first order logic sentences up to quantifier depth n. Similarly, we can test, say, fixed points by showing that fixed point logic, well, first order extended by these fixed point things, is contained within this infinitary k variable logic. And we can test each level of that hierarchy using this k-pebble game. So these are games where spoiler and duplicator play on two structures. They move a set of k-pebbles around the structures in each turn. Spoiler picks up one of the pebbles, moves it somewhere else. Duplicator responds in the other structure. And they play forever. So that's kind of capturing this infinitary nature of the logic. And you kind of think of that when you're thinking of adding fixed points, you can think of that as sort of unrolling the fixed point, kind of an infinitary amount of an unfolding that's infinitary. These K pebble games allow you to test each level of that logic. So if you want to show that something's not expressible in some query is not expressible in first order with fixed points, you'll say construct some family of structures, family of pairs of structures, or two families of structures, where one for each n, where so the first family satisfies the query, the second family doesn't satisfy the query, but at each level, duplicator can say win the K pebble game between those two structures. So that would mean that there is no K variable sentence that defines the query, and you can then say that there's no first order with fixed point thing that defines the query. So that's how we think of these games, and how we think of them as sort of testing the resources that we've added in. Okay. Here's the same slide again, accidentally added in. So what we want to do now is we see this as a process of sort of adding in extra quantifiers to add in extra power to first order logic. So what's the general construction going on here? And that's the idea behind these generalized quantifiers. So if we want to add some expressive power in, we kind of think of it as almost adding in an oracle, adding in something that can do the query that we can't do, can kind of access that thing that we're trying to express but can't express. So the way we think of that is we think of it as a query is an isomorphism closed class of structures. That's pretty natural idea of a query. You don't want two isomorphic structures to land you want, if one structure satisfies the query, then all isomorphic structures should also satisfy the query. So it's a pretty natural condition. And we want a notion then of how to add in these queries to first order logic one by one. And that idea is kind of what's given by these generalized or Lindstrom quantifiers. So the next two slides, I guess, are slides that maybe you can go through in sort of your own time if you like, but the kind of this sort of half finished slide that describes what we're going to do is maybe the best way to start. You're kind of thinking of living in this world on the right hand side here, relational structures over some signature tau, and you have some structure A there, and the idea is if you want to add in some query from some other set of relational structures, maybe ones with smaller arity than your original thing, you can interpret as one of these less complicated structures from A using your logic, and then you can use your oracle, your quantifier, to decide whether A prime is in Q or not in Q, and you want to be able to sort of access that in the logic related to R tau. So that's what these two things describe. You're saying this Q is going to be a query over the simpler signature, or structures over the simpler signature, and you're going to have a sentence or a formula in each in your underlying logic, which defines each of the relations sort of on your structure A. So it kind of creates a new structure, and then the semantics of this quantifier is basically going to say, well, A satisfies this description of a smaller structure bound by this quantifier if and only if the newly interpreted structure is in the query queue. So that's kind of the general idea. But in general, what are these things? Well, they can be very weird. You can have things like these Henkin quantifiers, which people may have seen before. Sort of like a parallel sort of parallel quantification. Like in first order logic, you have different forms of quantifier alternation, but ultimately, if you have a there exists sort of later than a couple of for alls, it can depend on any of the any of the things that have come before it. And that maybe is not necessarily what you want. So Henkin quantifiers give you a way of splitting that up and sort of giving you a Y that depends on X and a V that depends on U, such that they all satisfy together some structure. So these generalized quantifiers can add in sort of weird or not typical things. But they can also add in very, very strong things. And this can be maybe a problem when we're thinking of adding in oracles to get us from first order logic to P time. So you shouldn't really think of adding in all these generalized quantifiers as a way to get there, because I mean, yeah, you could decide, you can take Q to be say three colorable graphs, and then suddenly you've got things that are, you know, that are NP complete that you can express in your logic. You could even pick Q to be some undecidable query, and that would be, yeah, not very good from a descriptive complexity theorist point of view, but in the setup of these generalized quantifiers, that's the level of strength you can get. But also they're very important, as this result from Anuj states, which is that that if there is a logic, if this holy grail does exist, where there is a logic that captures P time, then there is one that can be phrased as sort of take first order logic with fixed points and add in some collection of generalized quantifiers. So so understanding these generalized quantifiers is really, I guess, key to understanding the power that we can add to first order logic.
Would that be a finite set of
No, in fact, I think it can't be a finite set of generalized quantifiers. And I mean, you can, well, so in the sense that when you add fixed points, for example, you're not actually adding fixed points could be phrased
yes, I see.
As these quantifiers, but fixed points are also, you're adding like an infinite family of fixed point quantifiers, really, when you say you're adding a fixed point quantifier. Because you could be adding fixed point quantifiers where the second order variable has arbitrarity. So it could be that there's a simple description of Q, like it's, you know, one type of special, like maybe a family of linear algebraic quantifiers, so, or something like that.
If I can say, I mean, the theorem actually shows that if there's a logic for P, there's one which is an extension of first order logic with a single family of quantifiers. So you these are sort of the vectorized family. It's an infinite family generated from a single problem, essentially.
Okay, so it is sort of uniform
Yes. No. I mean, it's essentially the argument shows that if there's a logic, then there's a complete problem under first order reductions. You take that problem and generate from it an infinite vectorized sequence of quantifiers, and that gives you a logic for P. But anyway. So that's a bit of a digression. Carry on.
No, but an important one. So thank you. Right. So I'm just a little bit. Okay. So I guess as mentioned just there with. The idea of this vectorized family of quantifiers is that arity here is sort of can be a limiting factor, and we want to say that so the arity of a quantifier is the maximum arity of this relational structure in which the underlying query is based, and we want a notation now to denote all the n-ary quantifiers, because this is what our game and ultimately our co-monad are going to be able to test. This is the resource arity. You can think of this as like a new way of grading, first order logic extended by all possible generalized quantifiers. So in the same way that variables and quantifier depth were used to grade first order logic and first order with fixed point formulas, arity can kind of give you a new grading here, and you can imagine that the higher up you go, the larger you make the arity, the more problems you can decide, right? And in particular, if you're looking at a structure over a relational signature that has some arity m, then if you add in all all queries up to arity M, you should be able to decide, well, every class in that relational structure. So you can kind of think of that smaller circle that we were looking at getting bigger and bigger and bigger until it eventually takes over all of the original signature, and then you can decide anything you want, and this becomes a bit trivial.
Ask again, when you're saying all quantifiers, so this could include things corresponding to undecidable properties?
Correct, yes. So here, even when you're adding in all n-ary quantifiers, so when you're adding in all binary quantifiers, for example, you're adding in all classes of isomorphism closed classes of graphs. Correct. So yeah, you're kind of going quite far away from computable problems, but hopefully that answers that question.
Right.
Yeah. So the the nice thing though is that we still have a game to test the expressiveness of this resource, and that's what Hella came up with in this famous paper, Logical Hierarchies for P Time. And this is this K pebble n bijective game between two structures. So this is a variant of the K pebble game, but in each round, the spoiler is going to pick up n pebbles and move them around. The duplicator is going to pick up n pebbles and move them around. And the restriction is at the start of every round, duplicator is going to give a bijection between the two structures. Then spoiler is going to pick up some pebbles from A, move them around a little bit, place them back down, and the responses that duplicator must give are determined by that single function that they've given at the start. So if spoiler moves something to A1, duplicator responds with F of A1, and similarly for all the way up. And that, again, changes the configuration of pebbles on A and of pebbles on B, and we have the same winning condition that we had in the normal K-pebble game. So if the resulting position is not a partial isomorphism between the pebbled components of the two structures, then spoiler is going to win. So duplicator wins this if they have a strategy, if they can pick an F at every round forever and continue to play forever. And so Hella's theorem from that paper is that if duplicator does have such a winning strategy, then the structures are equivalent in K variable infinitary logic extended by all arity N quantifiers. And Hella uses this in that paper then to show that, actually there is an example, a P-time problem that for every N that isn't captured by L, K, infinity, omega, extended by arity N quantifiers. So that's no level of this extending by arity N quantifiers, no matter how unlimited their power is computationally on each arity, there are still P-time problems that can't be captured by each of these levels. So that's it. And you might also see that this N bijective game is a simple generalization of the normal bijection game for K pebble. So this is the thing that decided counting infinitary K variable logic extended by counting quantifiers is the same as this, but where spoiler is just moving one pebble per turn. So that gives you a kind of a different way of proving that counting is the same as adding in counting quantifiers is the same as adding in all unary quantifiers.
Did you say that there was so he gives examples of P-time problems that escape this
classic, yes.
I'm sorry for being dense, but I mean, how does that relate to Anuj's result that you were quoting?
So that means that, so Anuj's result says you've got this vectorized set of quantifiers, one that goes sort of one for each n. So essentially what you would need for that vectorized quantifier is that the arity is going to have to keep getting, the arity of that, so of that vector needs to be unbounded.
Yes,
you can't bound the arity of quantifiers you're adding in, correct. So this is kind of then a summary of all these things that we're testing. I realize that I'm running a little bit short of time, so I'll just recap this quite quickly and then get on to the work that we've actually done. So these are the games that we have for testing. For testing this, we have this new grading, sort of a bi-grading of all the first order with all these generalized quantifiers, and that can be tested by this n bijective k-pebble game. Right. So then we go on to having a look at these comonads. These have been introduced, I guess, by Dan in the last talk, but the work by many people on this call has sort of founded this area, and I think we all agree that it's a pretty exciting area. We wouldn't be here otherwise. And the idea here is that these gradings and the games that are used to test them can then be given this nice categorical semantics in terms of these comonads. So you have this Ehrenfeld-Frese comonad, the Pebbling comonad, the modal comonad. These are the examples I'm giving here. But as Dan's shown, there's many more, and people are producing new ones all the time. The idea of these is that the comonad of the structure is basically going to give you all the spoiler moves, or the sort of lists of histories of spoiler moves, and it's going to put a relational structure on that such that, you know, homomorphisms are exactly the strategies, the sort of responses by duplicator, the winning strategies, which are responses by duplicator to each of those spoiler histories, will correspond to homomorphisms. So what we want to do is give a similar categorical semantics to these, to arity as a resource. But there were some challenges in turning this n bijective k-pebble game into the same sort of structure, into the same thing where you could take a look at the history of spoiler moves, put some relational structure on it, and relate winning strategies to homomorphisms, or these Kleisley homomorphisms. So a few of the problems we came up with, and I guess there some of them are similar to the ones that you came up with in coming with the guarded game, is that, you know, multiple pebbles are moving in every round here. There's this new restriction of duplicator having to give a bijection, which, you know, for the comonads really corresponded to one-way games, this bijection doesn't really make sense. That kind of seems to sit more with the counting game, so we need to do something about that. So we need some approximation to homomorphism. So we start off by introducing an n function game that's really just the same as the n bijective game, but we relax the condition that spoiler gives a bijection to one where spoiler gives just a function. Otherwise, the way this game is played is the same. There's some configuration of pebbles. Spoiler gives a function, or duplicator gives a function, spoiler moves some pebbles, and duplicator has to respond according to the function that they've given at the start of the round, same winning conditions as before. So we introduce this game, we then prove this theorem, which says that, what is the fragment of logic that this corresponds to, this new game? It turns out that when duplicator has a winning strategy for this game, it's equivalent to, you know, if a certain type of formula is true in A, for a certain type of formula, whenever that's true in A, it's true in B. And that's the fragment of logic we're talking about here is, so as before, there was these one-way games corresponded to existential positive sort of k-variable logic. The equivalent for these n function games is that it's going to be existential positive, but also extended by all of a particular type of quantifier, and these are the homomorphism closed quantifiers. So it's kind of maybe a little bit non-intuitive that homomorphism closed quantifiers are a smaller set than isomorphism closed quantifiers, but you can kind of, it's easy enough to think through, if something's closed under isomorphism, if something's closed under homomorphism, then it's closed under isomorphism, which is a subset of homomorphisms. So this is a smaller logic. That's the logic that corresponds to duplicator winning this. So if we were to have a comonad, we really want these winning strategies, or this logical sort of entailment, to correspond to the morphisms in the Kleisley category of our comonad. So how do we get from here now to a comonad? This is the sort of roadmap of doing that. We do it by kind of embedding it into a comonad that we already know. So we know that we have a comonad for the K Pebble game. That works, but we don't, at the moment we have this K Pebble n function game, which is looks a lot more complicated than just the K Pebble game. So we start by sort of reimagining our strategies for the n function game as particular types of strategies for the K Pebble game, but with restrictions on duplicate here. And then we kind of package up those restrictions into a quotient, which I think Dan had some harsh words, I think, for the use of quotients on these comonads before. So maybe there is a sort of more natural or direct way to reimagine these comonads. But this is the construction that we come up with. We model these restrictions as using this equivalence relation, and we take a quotient of the comonad in a way that we prove it works. And you can then see that these Kleisley maps are going to be winning strategies for duplicator. So I've packaged up some of the observations here. It's just saying that, I mean, if you have a strategy to play the n function game, well, you can turn that into a strategy for the K Pebble game simply by, well, every n rounds, duplicator is just going to write down the function they would have given at the start of the mth round of the n function game, and they're just going to restrict themselves to playing according to that function for the next n rounds. That's the kind of intuition you have for translating a strategy from this n function game into the K Pebble game. But then it's kind of clear that this family of strategies that comes through this translation is going to be much bigger than all of the strategies for the K Pebble game. So we need to figure out what is the limitation on duplicator. And that limitation is really going to be in the same way that Dan was talking about in the last talk. There are certain histories of spoiler moves that are going to look identical to a duplicator who is playing according to one of these translated strategies. So that's what we try to capture in this equivalence relation. We're going to identify two sort of histories of spoiler moves in the K Pebble game if they're both, you know, some n times n number of moves plus some additional moves where the sort of final pebble that's moved is going to be the same in both cases. And it doesn't matter what indices or what pebbles are used, we just want that where they're moved to are the same. That's basically what this is saying. And because duplicators responding according to this function, they should respond to S and T in the same way. So that's why we want to identify them. We also come up with a slightly more general result, which says that if you have an equivalence relation, a sort of natural equivalence relation, one for every A on this pebbling comonad, and this sort of is well defined with respect to the co-unit of the co-multiplication, then we can turn this, we can turn the quotiented structure into a comonad. And that's done. It's kind of, it took us a while to figure out what the right notion of a relation on this comonad should be. And it turns out it should be that which sort of reflects you want basically the quotienting map to reflect the relation. So it's, you kind of want two equivalence, or say you have a binary relation, you want two equivalence classes to be related if there is some element of each of the equivalence classes that's related in the original structure or in the original PKA. So that's once you have that, you can turn this into a comonad. Doing that, we then kind of do the sort of standard things you do with these game comonads. We look at proving theorems about the morphisms in the Kleisley category, and we look at coalgebras. So first of all, we prove this. I guess we call it a power theorem. I don't know, this is kind of trying to relate it to power and structure in some sort of way. Maybe this is not how you guys see power, but I see it as this is where you're seeing the sort of the logical power, the discriminatory expressive power of the logic is given in these within the Kukulczyk category. So you have these morphisms correspond to sort of this entailment in existential positive logic. Back and forth relation corresponds to equivalence in k-variable logic with all homomorphism closed quantifiers. And you know, as we started from Heller's game, we now recapture Heller's game by isomorphisms in the Kukulczyk category. And that's what this is saying. Then finally, we have a structure theorem that says, well, this is a bad typo, but given a co-algebra of this new co-monad, you actually get a new definition of a tree decomposition, and we call it a generalized tree decomposition. So I guess it could be seen as if you have a sort of a whiff K tree decomposition, N-ary tree decomposition, you're kind of, you're a structure that can be easily computed, or questions about it can be easily computed over sort of first order logic, but extended with these nice new oracles. So that's we define that, which is again quite complicated, but that gives us a new notion of how these tree decompositions should work, and that's something that we kind of want to explore. And to wrap up, sorry, 5 minutes over time. We have this way of taking PK and kind of generalizing it, using this sort of two-step construction, the translation of strategies and then quotienting it. We also, just by proving that result about quotients, we have a new way of constructing new game comonads from these old game comonads, which is possibly useful. And in future, we want to, one of the things that this allows us to do is that we have now a semantics for these generalized quantifiers, and some of the more interesting things that we would like to look at are candidates for these vectorized families that Anuja's result promises if we do have a logic that captures p time. And one of those is these linear algebraic quantifiers, which can be seen as sort of generalized quantifiers which are where the queries are closed under some stricter notion of isomorphism. So they're kind of maybe linear algebraically closed quantifiers. And maybe now that we have this semantics for all generalized quantifiers, we can restrict that in a way to get a nice semantics for these more esoteric and maybe more computationally interesting logics. So that was all I wanted to say. And I'm happy to take any questions if there's time.
Thank you. Yes, we are quite a bit over time, but if there are any quick questions, can you let me know? So either let me know in the chat. Oh, there we go. Bartek, you have a question.
So the hand raising works.
Yes. How did you do it, by the way?
When I opened, and then there is a button, raise hand.
Okay. Anyway, Bartek, your question.
I have a question about the lemma you put on slide.
Yes.
What would be the monadic counterpart of this?
That's a good question. I don't know because we haven't looked at the monads, and I think that this particularly relates to using the non-empty list co-monad as your underlying co-monad. So this relates to this PK, which is based on non-empty list. So I think it's specific to PK rather than it being a general fact about co-monads. I could be wrong. I mean, this is something I really want to know, and people who possibly know more about monads and co-monads, if there is an equivalent to these kind of results, that would be really great. But I think we specifically do use the structure of PK to get this.
Okay. Samson?
Two quick things. So the first thing is, having thought about it, I think actually these quotients may be quite natural because, as we said, we're restricting what spoiler can do. But if we want to move to a stronger logic, we're imposing some additional constraints. If you think about, you know, getting a map that has to then, we're making it a bit harder for duplicator by having to satisfy some constraints expressed by the preserving the equivalence relation. So I think it's sort of reasonable that you know, it might arise that way, although for technical reasons one might hope maybe to do things simpler, but I mean I don't find it objectionable anyway. The other comment was that, so in the sort of in the original Peplinka Monad paper, we did have a result that related to the Heller bijection game, where isomorphism in the Coe-Kleisley category of the basic Peplinka Monad did correspond to the Heller game, and therefore to equivalence in the full counting quantifier fragment. So I guess what's happening here is that you're refining that with a sort of, so you're sort of getting something that matches the Heller game at the level of firstly of homomorphisms, and then, you know, and then this homomorphism bijection game, and then eventually you're going to, you know, when you take the equivalence of that generator, it's going to correspond to this Coe-Kleisley isomorphism and the original Peplinka-Monad game. Is that right?
So yeah, if we I guess look at the this slide here I've got up 17. So that the isomorphisms in the Peplinka-Monad, the Kleisley category of the Peplinka-Monad, are really equivalents in this CK infinity omega. But the bijection, this bijection game generalizes that a bit. So it at the first level, at the Q1 level, it's going to be the same. But then the equivalences that you're going to get at higher levels are going to generalize that greatly. And yeah, I think it's almost a lucky accident that Q1, it captures all counting quantifiers for any arbitrary. But once you get above that, you get things that are, as we discussed before, undecidable. And
yes, I mean, I think it is a fact that in some sense the only thing you can do with unary quantifiers is count. I mean, that's the fundamental result there. And similarly, the only homomorphism preserved unary quantifiers, I mean, they're all generated by the existential quantifier. It's just when you go to arity 2, you get a much richer thing, because, for example, any isomorphism closed class of graphs or any homomorphism closed class of graphs, you know, you get either of those. Okay. But, okay, sorry, we've greatly run over. We should move on to the next talk. Thank you, Adam. I think...
Sorry for running over.
There we go. Okay. Yes, applause. And I just noticed there's an applause button in here as well.
So. Where is that?
Okay. So next is, oh, sorry. Nihil wanted to ask a question, but I'm going to hand over to you, Nihil, anyway. Maybe you can start by asking a question and then carry on with your question.
Yeah, so I guess my question with the... was in this is really great work, by the way. You can add all of the n-ary quantifiers, but if you wanted to maybe add like a subset of them, would that correspond to having a finer equivalence relation? And have you been able to like characterize some of those?
So yeah, that's a great question. We haven't yet, and we haven't figured out a way of restricting these quantifiers. There are certain games that do exist in the descriptive complexity literature that deal with restricted sets of quantifiers. For example, these invertible map games, which capture linear algebraic quantifiers. But to see how to restrict that from the sort of Coe-Monad or Peplinka-Monad point of view, we haven't figured that out yet. But that's kind of future work we really want to do.
Okay. And have you also been able to see, does it seem in principle you can do the same sort of constructions on the Einfurst for say and modal games and get the same result of adding generalized quantifiers?
Yeah, so that's, for the Einfurst Fraser game, it definitely works. I mean, I'm pretty convinced that the result that I showed on slide 17, that one about if you have a sort of well-defined natural equivalence relation, you'll get a co-monad at the other side will also work for the modal game. I think the problem with adding generalized quantifiers to the modal game is, at least in the basic modal game formulation, it's you're looking at binary quantifiers. So as soon as you add in the level two of the generalized quantifiers, you've got basically every expressible class and your logic stop becoming interesting at higher levels. But maybe with this new graded stuff, or you know, greater width of modal relation stuff, generalized quantifiers would be an interesting thing to study there.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay.